Great question. The Manufacturing Podcast offers news and information for the people who make, store, and move things, and those who manage and maintain the facilities where that work gets done.
I'm Scott Ockepole, and I'm managing editor of Smart Industry, an affiliated brand with Industry Week. I'm hosting Production Pulse today, titled Will AI Support or Control Manufacturing? With me today is Aaron Merkin, who is CTO of Fluke Corporation. Aaron formerly held positions at IBM, Dell, ABB, and Honeywell. And Dale Tutt, who is VP of Industry Strategy at Siemens. Dale worked in aerospace sector for over two decades for companies including Textron, Cessna, and most recently Virgin Galactic's aerospace system manufacturing organization, the Spaceship Company. Currently, Dale guides Siemens' relationship with Amazon Web Services' manufacturing arm to develop Gen AI applications for manufacturing.
This week's Production Pulse is about stripping the hype from AI in manufacturing, because AI is this year's buzzword. Rockwell Automation's 2024 State of Smart Manufacturing report includes a glossary of AI-related terms. Take that for what you will.
The example of machine learning that has been used in vision systems for smart inspection for quite some time, for example. I am sure you guys have other examples.
Yeah, Dale, would you like to go first? Want me to start?
Yeah, I'll go and go first on this one. So, you know, I think AI has been around for, and machine learning has been around for a number of years, over, you know, several decades. And we've seen it in many applications and how it's being used to optimize solutions. If you're talking about, especially in engineering software, you've seen it in some of the optimization software. We see it in a lot of places where it's being used as an assistant to help predict commands, for example. So it's been around for a long time. It's, I should say, you know, for a couple decades. I think Gen AI has really started to grow and be more prevalent on the scene now. And so we're starting to see AI in a number of applications out in the manufacturing environment, where it's being used to help automate the creation of, say, work instructions or, you know, part manufacturing information, that it's being used to help automate the development of the bill of process, so how you build parts. So, and then even in a lot of other tasks, you're using assistants to really help find documents. So if, you know, a technician is in there trying to identify documents, they, you know, helps them find them. So really can help out in a lot of different areas right now with what we're seeing with AI.
Yeah, and I think from my side, you know, there's been, kind of, I think the first wave of AI adoption tied in the industrial space tied to IoT around 2013 or so. And the last 18 to 24 months of massive disruption around generative AI is kind of, I think to some people made it feel like it's a relatively new phenomenon. But to Dale's point, I mean, it's something that's been in practice for decades. For example, we have a technology that's been developed over 30 years. It's a form of AI, which is an expert system, but it's a system that we use to provide guidance to vibration analysts to improve our ability to predict outcomes of machine health. And for example, just we have over that 30 years in the amount of data that we've collected for just a single asset class of a simple pump with a flexible coupling to a motor, we have over 3 million unique labeled machine tests that we've been able to use, again, developing an expert system and now transitioning to machine learning-based technologies.
Aaron and Dale, I want to ask you about Gen AI specifically. The large language models like OpenAI, how might they be deployed for manufacturing operations directly, right on the plant floor, for example?
Yeah, go ahead, Aaron.
Thank you. I was going to say, so, you know, we're a reliability-focused organization. In a lot of our interaction, there's, if you think about the plant floor, you've got your maintenance technicians and you have your operators of the equipment. And our, you know, where we see with our focus on reliability is the use of generative AI to address the skill shortages, but to some extent labor shortages, but more importantly, the eroding of domain expertise and skills in industrial facilities. And as Dale alluded to, creating co-pilot-like capabilities where you're able to take a relatively junior engineer or technician, and through the kind of adaptive coaching and directions to them, have them perform much more complex maintenance tasks than perhaps they would be able to with just their limited amounts of experience. So there's a bit of taking the graying workforce, somebody who's been next to working with machines for 20 or 30 years, trying to codify that knowledge either through looking backwards at the history of work orders performed on assets, or through more direct captive technologies of how they perform their work, create a baseline definition of how the guided work instruction should be provided to a reliability engineer, but then make those instructions themselves. And I think the key part that is unique to more the generative AI capabilities that are coming out now is that ability to adapt in real time the type of instructions that you give. So you may have an individual who, for example, constantly forgets that a bolt is left-hand threaded versus right-hand threaded. So for that individual, your work instructions and kind of the coaching you're going to get is to remind them before they go strip the bolt that this is a left-handed one. Whereas perhaps you have somebody who's been there 10 years and they still need to perform the same maintenance routine, but they don't need that extra noise and distraction of being reminded of things that they've done. So I think the ability to kind of codify deep domain expertise that have been in facilities, simplified and translate to individuals, but then ultimately even personalize that to make individual people much more productive is where we're seeing the opportunity in the reliability space.
Yeah, I think I'll add to that. I'm very excited about the direction that we're seeing Gen AI and where AI can really take us in our manufacturing environments. And the example that Aaron gave relative to how you optimize, say, work instructions depending on the worker's technical capability, maybe how often they've done that. And I think that's I think that's a great area. And so one of the things I really want to talk about here is that how Siemens working with AWS has really been democratizing the access to AI and generative AI so that we can deploy it out to more people more quickly. And by bringing our expertise together, we're really helping customers scale up and the implementation of some of this technology and transform their businesses. So I think as we see this being deployed in creation of work instructions, helping out with optimizing your quality control processes, maybe even optimizing your plan as you laid out, we're trying to bring this capability to companies faster and on top of their existing solutions. And so, at CES, at the Consumer Electronics Show here a few months ago, we announced this partnership with AWS to really to integrate the generative AI solutions from Amazon Bedrock into our Mendix low code platform so that people can go in and actually make modifications bring some of these applications to the marketplace faster and to companies faster, building on their existing solutions and extending it. So the ability to have that, I think is a real opportunity to really bring it more access to a lot of our customers. And as a matter of fact, we will be showing these at Hanover Messe. So if any of your listeners are going to Hanover Messe next week, you can stop by the demo, by our respective booths for some interactive demos as well.
Dale and Aaron, I'm curious to hear what you both had to say about this. What do experts think about the conflating of all types of AI into the same bucket is good for manufacturing, or whether vendors and experts need to be specific?
I do think sometimes people need to be specific because I think there's different understandings from their audience and who they're talking to. But I have to say, when I start thinking about the applications of AI and machine learning as an extension of what, what companies are already trying to do, does it really matter what the technology is? That's a good question to ask. And so I do think it's important. Sometimes I think people understand, when they hear generative AI versus regular AI, I think they need to recognize that it is doing different things in how you're applying machine learning and the rest of these solutions. So, I think it's helpful to be specific now. Now, maybe in the future, maybe they become a little bit, the lines get a little bit blurrier, but we'll see how things, I think, continue to mature.
I think I would look at maybe just a little bit different that the AI is a tool to enable an outcome for a customer. And as we look at how do we productize AI, what we really want to focus on is the outcome that we're going to be able to provide. Right. And then the guarantees around that outcome, and the technology that we use to do that is sort of just kind of the, it's important to understand the limitations of it. But I think that there's also, there's a standard sort of hype cycle in the space of AI when, say, 15 years ago, it first got it started, companies that didn't have any AI capabilities were talking about having advanced analytics as a way of sort of shading themselves towards having AI. And then AI became sort of dominant in terms of everybody's marketing and literature and capabilities. And now there's a shift to, let's talk about instead generative AI so that we can say we're, you know, sort of the next leading edge technology provider. So I think that there's a little bit of sort of deliberately conflating them in the sense that by not really focusing on the outcome, but instead focusing on a generation of technology, companies are really trying to gain market mind share and market share versus focusing on using the technology to solve a customer problem.
Yeah. If I can add just a little bit to that, I completely agree. I think when we talk to a lot of customers, it's focusing on the business outcome. You can certainly have the technology, but you know, you really need to focus on what you're doing. And I think that's why I was getting at, you know, with, you know, maybe the technology is not as important. I understand that companies, you know, want to say, hey, we're doing the latest and greatest and we're using this. And I think that's, you know, I think the main thing is what's the customer, what's the business problem that you're trying to solve, and what technology provides the most value. And sometimes I think it's too easy to fall into the technology trap that it's not just about technology. It's about how do you train your people? How do you adjust your processes to implement the new technology? So I think when you start to have a holistic view of bringing together the people, the tools, and the processes, that how do you solve a business problem? And I think that's where we think that by bringing this together in a way that companies can actually make the decision, what do they need to implement, and then apply that to the business challenge that they have.
And I think just there's also a little bit of difference in that, depending upon maybe the size of the customer, the maturity of the customer in terms of whether they prefer yes. to acquire wholesale solutions, whether they have an in-house IT department that wants to build custom. There is a sort of in that mid-market, maybe less sophisticated in terms of technology customer, but more focused on business outcome. It is easier to go to bring to them a solution, explain what the solution does, and then explain how AI is supporting it. At the other end of the market, you do have customers who very specifically want to get into splitting hairs on which specific type of AI technology you're using and why. So there's a conflation, I think, that makes it convenient for vendors to offer solutions to customers, because just talking about we do AI and we can do all parts of it, not getting into the details to get attention. But then we should not be focused on AI. As I said, we'll be focused on what the outcome, but there will inevitably be a particular end on the high end. I think my experience has been on the high end of the market, you'll have customers who are going to force you to get down into the weeds and details of exactly how you're building or which AI technologies you're using.
Okay, guys, one more question, and it's philosophical in nature. Where's the line drawn between supported by AI and dependent on AI? And how does one know they're about to cross that line?
I was thinking about this because it's a really difficult question. I think for me, I don't know. There's like a resiliency model in terms of it, or I should say there's more of a robustness model, where at some point you're going to hit a tipping point and where you've realized that you no longer have the in-house expertise to be utilizing AI versus fully dependent upon it. But so I think that the distinction to me is if you no longer have the subject matter expertise or the domain knowledge to perform a task because you've completely outsourced it to an AI model, at that point you're dependent. Prior to that, you're supported. I think, unfortunately, most people will find that as they start adopting these technologies, that they wake up one day and realize they went from being supported to dependent and have to make a decision whether they're comfortable with that or would want to come back and sort of return to first principles themselves and build back up the capability to restore balance where they're being supported and not controlled.
Yeah, I can certainly... I think there's a lot of value in what Aaron has said there. I did take a little bit of a different look at this. When you think about supported by AI and versus dependent on AI. And I think part of the challenge, or you know, part of the part of what we try to do is that we're you know, we have foundational solutions that are based on the real world, and you understand the, you know, the dynamics and the physics and how that's working. And but then when we bring AI to enhance those solutions in a way that helps, you know, by bringing AI and generative AI to really help empower customers to make more informed decisions and real time decisions, and you know, and working with Amazon Web Services and how we bring these solutions together, cloud-based solutions, so that you don't need a lot of infrastructure to support them, but they're built on top of, you know, other solutions as well. And that's, you know, what I was talking about, well, like when you're extending your solutions with, you know, with low code to, you know, to bring in generative AI solutions. And so as you evolve, you start with a project and you evolve, you're supported by AI, to then as you start to recognize the business value you're getting and that you're getting the results that you expect, that, you know, then you maybe your solutions become more dependent on AI, not necessarily negative, but it does reflect how far along you've gone down in that transition. So, you know, I think it's important to, you know, you have to keep in mind, you know, what's behind making it happen. And at the end of the day, you know, the implementation of AI and generative AI is only going to be successful when the data can be really sifted and you know what you have, that you have good data and it could be analyzed. And so there's an underlying foundation of data models that you're interpreting it effectively. I think, you know, if you think about how you've used simulation models and different analysis models in the past, you need to understand how far you can extend them. And so, you know, really working on the cloud, that can help that make that possible real time. So you still have to understand how the equipment operates, as Aaron said. But if you're really going to extend that and get the opportunities to improve it and be able to do predictive maintenance or simulation of new materials as you bring them in and really using the power of the digital twin to help make better decisions, I just think that, you know, I think it brings a huge opportunity. And you know, all of our customers, you know, at Siemens and Amazon Web Service, they're struggling to hire enough people. And, you know, we talked about this at the beginning, and really being able to transfer that knowledge to the next generation of workers, you know, is going to be critical for us going forward. And so I think it's still important, as Aaron says, you got to keep a fundamental understanding how your business operates, and then you leverage the AI to help automate a lot of those processes. So I think that'll be important. It's an important decision for companies to make as they implement more and more generative AI.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for bearing with our technical issues today. And again, I'm Scott Ockapole, and I'm with Smart Industry subbing for Dennis Semeca today at Industry Week. And I appreciate everybody joining the program today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thanks. Thank you.